You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Santi, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's going on, folks? Welcome to episode 128 of the Fanboy Garage. Always a pleasure to have you guys with us for another week. Ah, so much to talk about. Finally, there's a lot of news. Sorry we missed you guys last week. We took a breather and are getting back to action. So jumping right in. Let's start with the show that everyone is talking about on social media, WandaVision.
Yeah. So, WandaVision. You know, you know what? It's funny. The first episode did nothing for me. And I was watching it and I was just like, ugh. Like, it just wasn't working for me. It wasn't working even as like a pseudo sitcom or like a show within a show. Yeah. And then the second episode, though, I loved. Like, completely different reaction. Second episode for me, I loved it. It put everything into perspective for me. Like, the whole show comes into focus, I think. There's still mysteries and stuff, but where this show is headed comes into focus in the second episode. I loved the tribute to, like, or the homage to Bewitched in the opening credits, which was really cool. But I just felt like once you realize that you are watching a show within a show, it became a lot easier to get into like the mysteries and all of that stuff. I think the first episode was more almost just like that was a sitcom, you know, and it just for me anyway, because it was mostly focused on the introduction of that world and the character. I mean, you get the thing at the end, which you know, obviously tells you that, you know, this is, and there's teases, of course, throughout the episodes that what you're watching is not exactly what you think it is, you know? So they don't really, you know, it is pretty obvious, but yeah, I'm fascinated by where this thing is headed. I think it's going to, we know it's going to tie in to this next phase of the MCU and multiverses and all of that stuff. And I've read a million theories, online as to, you know, where this thing is going to end up and, you know, who the villains are going to be and, you know, different themes and stuff. I mean, we saw the sword references dropped in there and little Easter eggs and things like that that are really cool. So, yeah, I mean, it'd just be interesting to see what this show winds up. It's 9 episodes, right? So,
yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So we have 7 more episodes left to see where this thing is going. And yeah, we'll see. It's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. What'd you think, Vanana?
I agree with Chris. I thought the first episode was like, oh, I don't know if I can get into this. But then by the second episode, you kind of see what they're doing and where they're taking you through. Yeah. And watching the trailers and everything, you know we're going to land in other worlds. Right. So that's pretty cool. And it was just so quirky. As I was watching, I was like, I can't believe I'm actually watching a concept like this because I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
You know, like each episode paying homage to a different type of sitcom or a different type of like reality that the audience is used to and using our references for shows that we know and love. Like in the future, there's going to be a Full House type of episode, you know, and her sisters are like famous, you know, for being in Full House. So it's that mind kind of like warp that goes through you as you're watching it. And I think that's really cool because, you know, Scarlet Witch is someone that can bend reality. And I think they're really using this concept to go into the reality of the audiences as well and not just the world of the characters. Yeah. So you actually feel like you're kind of part of it, but at first it's weird, but now I'm into it. I think the acting was amazing. I think that like sitcom, like hello, you know, all those beats, that's really, really hard to do, especially actors that are trained the way they are right now. That is really hard to do. And they both, like Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen, they nailed it. So, I wasn't into it at first, and then I got into it, and the more I thought about it, I'm like, okay, like, you got my attention. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what's going on with the neighbor, like everything. By the second episode, it pulls it all together.
There are well, before I get into that geeky stuff, like I love it. I love it because it's bold. If you would have told me last year I knew this show was coming, so let's say 3 years ago that Marvel would be doing a show like this or would be continuing their universe in this format and with this kind of content, I'd be like, no way. Like, there's no way. We're so, I know a lot of people, like, people were texting me Friday like, dude, did you see it? What'd you think? Like, would love to hear. And I was like, yeah, chill, I haven't seen it, because Jess wanted to watch it, and then we got caught up watching something else, so I just watched it without her. I'm going to rewatch it with her.
Been there.
Yeah. So I'm rewatching it. I banged through it. First episode, I was kind of taken aback. It wasn't that I was off-putting. I was just like, oh, okay, we're starting right here. Like, you're not giving us anything to work off of.
Right.
And that was a little jarring. But once I was like, once I got into it, I did slip into the Aaron that was like 5-6 years old when I would stay with my grandmother and they had nothing but black and white TVs and watching like I Love Lucy and the old shows. Or then like when I moved, I remember putting myself to sleep watching like Nick at Night and like catching up on all of those old shows that someone my age probably shouldn't have been watching, but like I watched all of that stuff, right? And feeling like this feels so familiar to me. A lot of the stuff that's happening feels so familiar, and for a moment I got taken out of like I'm actually watching a comic book property, you know, from Marvel until the end where the whole thing that whole thing happens and he chokes and Vision saves him, and you can see Wanda in both episodes slipping out of the realities that she's creating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like there's a little bit of madness in her. And I'm like, well, so many questions every episode. And there's Easter eggs galore in every episode, which I think is awesome too. But yeah, I agree. The second episode, once they kind of set the stage and you're like, okay, this is the way it's gonna be. I expect now that we're kind of familiar with the format where you're like, we start the show, air quotes, and then we go through the trope of the show, and then somewhere in there they're gonna slip us a little, you know, a little Marvel MCU goodie with like, here's what's going on in the world around them. I'm cool with all of that. And I just think it's brilliant. I think it's absolutely brilliant because I've never seen anything like this before. You know, it's a comic book show that's mixing those awesome sitcoms of like all these generations, you know, 50s, 60s, and we kind of work our way. I'm assuming we're going to be in the Brady Bunch era next. With a little bit of the Twilight Zone, and I'm good with it.
Yeah, you know, funny.
I love this.
And it borrows from, in a lot of ways, from the Tom King run, right, of Vision, which is great stuff where it kind of went back to that time, that innocent time, you know. And it's weird because sitcoms, so we don't really talk sitcoms on here, but sitcoms are one of my favorite things ever, right? It's if I had to probably choose like one thing to watch for the rest of my life, it would be that. It would be sitcoms.
There'd be No Retreat, No Sound.
So, yes. So, you know, I Love Lucy, one of my favorite shows of all time. You know, The Dick Van Dyke Show, which the first episode of this show borrows very heavily from, is a classic show. And I, too, like you, you know, watch the Nick at Night stuff and all of that. So that's right in my wheelhouse. Even though that first episode didn't really work for me, I think the Bewitched homages worked better for me in season two just because of the concept of the show, as opposed to trying to do like a straight Dick Van Dyke show style sitcom kind of was mixed up. But yeah, The Twilight Zone, also one of my favorite shows of all time. So that's where all of this stuff starts to collide. And it's like, I agree in a way, like I never really thought that I would get a show that where all of these worlds of mine, comic books, superheroes, you know, the MCU and sitcoms and classic sitcoms, like old school, would all collide somehow. You know, every once in a while you'd get an episode of a show where like it would be like the show within a show where the person would be dreaming and they would dream that they were in classic shows, you know, and things like that. And you'd kind of see something like this. But like this is unique. And the fact that it's going to ultimately have a point is also makes it special because it's not just throwaway stuff. It's not just a concept to do a concept. It's going to lead to something much bigger. And in probably something tragic too, right? In a lot of ways, because if you understand what's happening here and you remember what happened with Vision and all of that stuff, and there's even like nods to that too, right? Teases to that where when you start to get an idea that, oh, she is kind of controlling this because there's these references to all of these things. Like that's what makes this such a, just a fascinating show, really.
You know, we were talking last week about storytelling, right? And how you kind of, storytellers have to evolve, you know, with the audiences as well, because we are just so on top of it.
Yep.
And this type of concept and type of story, how they have just done it so well that you don't know what's coming next. And we're a viewership, audience viewership that we can pretty much predict a lot of things in a lot of the movies that we see now. But something like this, to just have the idea of, okay, this is like Marvel Universe, but we are going to set it in all of these different eras, these different types of shows, and then tell the story within the story with all of those classic tropes that you love and fit that on a piece of paper, edited perfectly, not wasting any dialogue or time, but still giving the audiences and the fans little Easter eggs that they love, but paying homage to the shows that they love. I just think that's brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant storytelling, and that's how Marvel is setting itself apart from, you know, maybe other like entities.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the even in the fun moments of what we've seen thus far, right, which are genuinely funny, because they do play on some things that obviously, I mean, we're familiar with it. Like that whole magician scene.
Great.
Like I thought it was hilarious, but there's so much nuance in a lot of the stuff that's happening that I was like, holy shit, like you are laying it thick on me. It's like on the surface, I think this is the problem. I think a lot of people maybe watching this show, taking it for what it is. Right, like, oh, this is a little off-putting because I didn't think it was going to be exactly like a TV show in a show, but there are so many, like, let's go talk a little bit about the Easter eggs. Like the nosy neighbor, I'm almost positive is a witch character from the Marvel Universe. Agnes, I forgot her last name. And that there's something up with her because it almost feels like she's the one who's manipulating Wanda to do or say certain things. And so I'm catching on to stuff like that. They keep on talking about like the like that second episode where they're like, oh, it's for the children. It's for the children. It's for the children. And then boom, she's pregnant. She like willed it into existence. But if you watch parts of the first episode, that woman, the nosy neighbor, is laying it in like subtly about, oh, the kids. And so there are like little hints, like even in that opening montage, the Bewitched sort of cartoon intro, or there's a moment where Vision kind of fades into the floor. There's a helmet in the floorboards, and that helmet is a classic. It's the Executioner helmet. It's a classic Marvel villain.
I didn't know
whose
that.
Helmet is inside the floorboard. So there are a whole lot of like little Easter eggs that people should be getting super excited about if they're familiar with this stuff. But it's just awesome to kind of like, well, first of all, it was awesome to see that Marvel's back, That's number one, because it's been a long time since I've heard that Marvel fanfare in quite a while. And when I did, I got very excited about it. And it's just, it says a lot about what's going to happen in the future. Like, what this next, like, the fact that they kind of moved things around because the show was ready and they didn't feel like it was going to really hurt, but actually set the stage for the next wave of Marvel films, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. I'm so excited.
And there's all these fun, it's like, things, smart. Like the voice that's asking her, like, Wanda, who's doing this to you on the radio? And, you know, people are speculating about who that is going to be. And, you know, the House of M stuff, right, that kind of thrown in there, her creating this world, and, well, seemingly, anyway, that we think and manipulating it, and the ramifications of that. And
I mean, it's funny because that House of M, that line – in the first episode when she's pouring the wine, the bottle of wine says, House of – it starts with M.
Yeah.
It's House of something. So there's a lot of – there's so much to chew on.
Yeah. And this show, the tone of it and where they're going with it lends itself to that, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not the real world.
No.
Right? So you can throw these little things in there and they're not – like random or weird. I mean, they are random, but like they fit because nothing really you're seeing is what you think it is, right? So it's perfect forum for that. And you know, the Disney Plus forum is the perfect thing for something like this. This is not something that you would probably try in a movie.
No.
Right? But you could do it here. It's perfect for this because it's a short story, 9 episodes. It's not something that's going to go on forever. Right, it's a specific story with a specific purpose.
Yeah,
and that's really great use of this because this is, you know, this is kind of like when they used to do those little like one shot things. That they used to have, and they would kind of do things that were a little fun and kind of geeky you said and
that.
Stuff
I
like
thought
that.
About that a lot actually when I was watching.
Yeah, this is like a giant version of that to me.
Yeah,
you know,
and. You know, I think the what you were saying about this not being the real world, a lot of people have speculated this is a pocket universe, right? And so clearly things are infiltrating this bubble that she's created, right? So we know that S.W.O.R.D. is an element here, and somehow they're either monitoring what she's doing or they're watching her. Obviously, watching, monitoring, same word. But they've dropped somebody in there. And she is, I forgot her first name. I know her last name, but she's the next, like, Miss Marvel. So Rambeau is her last
name. Yeah, Monica.
Mm-hmm.
Monica Rambeau, thank you. So she's in there. She pops up in episode 2, but even before you see her on screen, she's in the supermarket in the animated form. So there's so much.
There's
cool
a little
S.W.O.R.D.
logo on that truck that she pulls
on the helicopter
the toy
and then
thing.
On the beekeeper that comes out, which is very, that was like the weirdest thing,
but
they're both genuinely scared, so somebody's entering their bubble,
right?
And then she can control it. The other thing too is she, even though Wanda is going through the motions of like fitting into these perfect worlds that she's creating, when the shit hits the fan, because she's the one who's doing it, actually, she refers to Vision like as if they were still Avengers. Like she's like when the dude is choking, she's like, Vision, save him.
Right.
Because she knows he can, not because it's like she knows exactly what he needs to do it.
Yeah.
And then if you watch closely, she's the one that makes him choke because he's breaking that reality. So she blinks at him so hard.
Yeah.
In that scene, and then he starts choking. And the whole, the thing with the glass and the second.
And even with the beginning, like, she basically, like, rewinds
the whole
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird. You know, it's funny when they announced the name of the show as WandaVision, a lot of people, myself included, were like, oh, that's kind of a weird name. Like, why wouldn't they call it Wanda Endvision?
Yeah.
Well, obviously now it makes sense because it's his WandaVision that we're watching. It's just he's also Vision, right? Which kind of is cute, but like it's Wanda. Like you could have named this show WandaVision even if Vision wasn't in it, and it still would make sense. So,
yeah. I'm so interested to see how she brought him back. Like, if she reconstructed the Mind Stone. Like, that is the big question mark for me, because the Mind Stone is popping up a lot in these episodes.
Perhaps. What, like, you guys...
It's a hexagon shape. Hexagon of six?
Six, yeah. Yes.
So that hexagon shape pops up in every episode. And as a matter of, like, so at the end of each episode, they're framed in a hexagon.
I didn't notice that.
And there are six Infinity Stones, right? Mm-hmm. The shape of his stone is six. It's a hexagon. It's an odd shape, though. That pops up on the closet of the disappearing, reappearing closet.
It's
his stone that pops up, yeah. So they're like... they're laying it on super, super thick. Yeah. And like for me, as a person who's like, you know, and we talked about this last time where we may have talked offline about it, but as we try to figure out shows when we're watching a show, like, we can put it all together. Oh, this person's going to do that. And it's going to end like this. I can't do that with the show.
No.
And yeah. And, but I, like, I'm chewing up all the details because I can't do that. Right. So, and which makes it fun, you know what I mean? And I am this is a show that I didn't expect to have, you know, like, that fever of needing to watch it every Friday like I was with The Mandalorian, but yet I'm like, oh, Friday, brew my coffee. I'll be texting you guys super early after I watch it.
Great. Just as we were done.
I like that this is also being released in the weekly format.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if this was dropped all at once and you can binge through it, like, I don't know how you can just soak in everything, because there's so much going on in each episode, even though it's really simple. You know, it's seemingly simple, but all of the, you know, little Easter eggs that you're already pointing out, it's like, you can watch it twice over just to catch those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate, you know, it's funny, because if you were to go back a couple of, I'd say a lot of episodes of the show, I probably would have been, and I probably said this, but I used to like binging shows. Like, I prefer binging shows, but I'm at this point now where the weekly drop gets me very excited about what's to come, and like, it gets my brain going, you know, and I start to speculate on things, and to your point, continue to unravel those Easter eggs. And I enjoy that. Like, it, you know, I think about shows that have left a mark on me that have gone through that, that I've actually watched, like The Watchmen, and being able to sit with that a little bit, and The Boys, you know what I mean? The Mandalorian, like, that's all, like, this is awesome TV when we've got those.
Well, it's how we used to watch TV. It's funny what you mentioned, because all the Easter eggs and the little things you're picking up on. So I there was one show in my lifetime that did that to me.
Yeah.
Not in modern times, like pre all of this and streaming. And and unfortunately it didn't end well. But Lost was like that with me. Like, would look at, and watching this kind of almost gave me that vibe, like, what's really happening, what's real, what isn't real. Like, look for all these little things that are popping up, and are those clues? Are they just Easter eggs? Like, all of that. But the thing that made Lost so cool, though, until the end, was that you would, every week, like, you would get together with people and just analyze the episode and digest all these things, and people would go back and rewatch them. You know, and try to, and this was, again, back, you still have to, like, you know, on the VCR and stuff like that, you'd be going back and rewatching. But there is a value to that. Like, a show like Cobra Kai, I binged because it's not that dense of a show. Right. And it's just, like, it goes by quickly. The episodes aren't that long. So for that, I don't mind, like, the binge. But for a show like this, I would prefer to do it week to week so that I'm kind of forced to take it in, digest it, like, not just go like crazy on it, because it's more rewarding that way. And I think that we're starting to see a move in that direction now, especially with Disney Plus. They seem to be big fans of the weekly rollout type of model, and I'm okay with that. So,
well, it also helps keep subscriptions alive, doesn't it?
That too. Yep. Sure.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
You can't just get a subscription for a month, binge your show,
right,
cancel it, and then when your next show comes on, then you sign up again.
Unless you're just bombarding with content. Yeah.
I agree. I think certain shows you definitely can binge, you know, like Cobra Kai. I've been binging that. I think I'm almost done with season two. I don't know how many episodes there are left in season two, but I think I'm on like episode 9.
Yeah, you're close.
I'm close, right? Yeah. So totally bingeable. It's what I've been doing all day.
Yeah.
Skirting my responsibilities, watching Cobra Kai.
No one's faulting you for that. It's an awesome show.
It's really good. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it. I needed something lighthearted.
Yeah. Oh, it's about to get real dark.
Great. It's a little, like, sometimes it's weird to see, like, the teenagers, like, kiss and make out and stuff, you know? I'm like, you're 16, you know? But otherwise, I'm really enjoying the show. Yeah. I think everything you guys said about it last episode was spot on.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next season. Because, like, holy cow, do they give it to us again with an awesome cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Season 3.
I'm not there yet.
No.
You'll get there. I mean, they're going to do it to you this time. Yeah. You're binging it, so.
I'm not there yet. Well, I mean, since we kind of just naturally transitioned to it, I know Sean, one of our supporters and listeners, he had a question for us on Twitter this week about the martial arts in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since he posed that question about 4 days ago, I've been paying a little bit more attention to the martial arts and like the choreography and just the film fighting. Now, personally, I don't study karate. It's just not one of the styles that I've ever learned.
Mm-hmm.
However, I did find that there were a lot of similarities between the way that Miyagi-Do is training Sam and Robbie,
mm-hmm.
and my trainer Demetrius trains me, not Cobra Kai. Like, never had to line up in that sense. Wear a gi, yeah, not like that. But all of their circle work, my trainer does the exact same thing with me. Like, we'll do like our Kali sticks in a circle and make sure we can do that formation. We have done where he makes everyone stand in a circle and you're in the middle and he'll call out whoever's names.
Oh, wow.
You know, just like he was doing when he was saying, but he used numbers like 1, 2, 3.
Right.
But so he's done that and called out names, you know, all of the circle motion is very Wing Chun. We don't call it wax on, wax off, but we practice circling wrist, just wrist work, constant circling, like outside circle, inside circle. Sometimes we just do drills where we're just circling and you have to close your eyes. And when you close your eyes, you're more in tune with your wrist. And that's where the movement starts. So you need to get attuned to someone's wrist movements and you try and change direction. And you try and intercept and change the direction of the flow. So all of that stuff I really related to, and it made me really miss going to training, actually. But my trainer kind of lost his studio space because of COVID, so that really sucks. So it's been really nice to watch it on screen and see these kids, you know. And the other thing about the martial arts in the show is they don't need to be perfect. Like, they're kids that are training. So, right. You know, I might notice like little things like, okay, her foot is not turned in all the way when she's doing a side kick. You know, you want your toe to be facing the other way, for example. But those are such small things. And they're kids like learning how to defend themselves. I think it's great. It makes me feel all fuzzy inside.
Yeah.
So I think for the most part, the martial arts is good. Like, the fight scenes, everything is pretty spot on.
Cool.
Yeah. You know what's interesting I found about that? Because you and I have trained in similar arts, I think, for the most part, right? Kali, JKD, Wing Chun, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some Silat. All martial arts that now have become very popular in fight choreography, right? And which, obviously, you would know a lot about. But in this show, what's cool is obviously they're not, they're doing karate in a sense, right? Because that's what they're supposed to be training in. But they're making the karate, which these days is not something that you see often in modern like fight choreography and stuff. But there, it seems fresh. It seems cool. It's still very karate in some ways. But they do a really good job of making it look like impactful and convincing and I think more so even than like in the original Karate Kid movie, you know, from 84. So I guess you do get that influence now of like modern fight choreography, even though they're kind of sticking to the same things and concepts.
Yeah, there's a lot of moves, you know, different beats that are recycled in different people's fight scenes. You notice like kind of like the same moves. So they're keeping it pretty simple and pretty foundational. There's nothing like crazy thrown in there that you're like, ooh, I've never seen that move before. It's everything that they're learning, which I think is great because they're actually learning that and utilizing it in, you know, their street fights or whatever, their party fights. They're not just coming out of thin air with something totally different because a fight choreographer thought it'd be cool. You know, it fits within the show of what their senseis are teaching them. So I can't wait to get back to training. That's all.
Cool. It's funny that we're talking about this. So about a day ago, I don't know if you guys watch like The Insider, but they have like these awesome YouTube videos where they will ask a professional, like it'd be a stuntman, it'll be like a fencer or something like that, to critique films or content based on their experience. And so they recently had a world champion karate expert critique show of like movies like Bloodsport, The Karate Kid, and Cobra Kai. And she's going to be representing the USA in Tokyo in karate. And she said that the fighting in Cobra Kai is actually better than the original Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, you know, a lot of the stuff that they're doing now is the way that she would be doing it if they were sparring in some cases or if they were competing. You know, she was talking about form and like actual use of like karate movements. And it was a really, really awesome, probably like 10 or 15 minute video to watch, but she breaks it down and it's really cool. She's shit all over Bloodsport. She's like, oh yeah, Van Damme can kick and he's definitely an athlete, but like
that's it.
There's a lot of bullshit going on in that movie. And I'm like, oh boy. Well,
yeah, that's pretty cool. That's how I felt too.
Yeah.
But I'm no expert, but you know, it fit in the world totally.
Yeah. And you would think it should be evolved, right? I mean, because it is, you know, 30 years or whatever after the events of the Karate Kid. So you would think that things would evolve too. So that even makes sense, right?
Yeah. And she talks about like, you know, some of the like, you know, like the jumping roundhouse kicks and like, you know, the jumping, she's like, no one jumps. Cause like, you can see that coming a mile away, but
she's
like,
you know, how many people could pull that off too? Like in the moment.
Yeah, she also critiqued Ip Man 4.
That was so bad.
Yeah, so I stopped watching after I think 3. But so she critiqued because it's Donnie Yen's Ip Man versus some karate guy, and she's
bad. I stopped watching that movie halfway.
That series
when Mike Tyson popped up, I'm like,
series changed after the second one. Because even the third one is like, cause you know what? Actually, in some ways, and this is a horrible analogy, so I'm going to admit that up front, but still go with it, just for the sake of this conversation. It's similar to how, in a way, the Rocky franchise changed with Rocky 3 and 4. Because like Rocky 1,
that's a perfect analogy.
Rocky 1 and 2 are still kind of staying true to the idea of like boxing in his pure form and the down on his luck fighter and all this. He becomes like a superhero in 3 and 4, and it's like a comic book and a cartoon at that point, right? So it's less of, so he's fighting Hulk Hogan and you know, Mr. T, and then in 4, you know, you got the Russian kills a guy in the ring, and, you know, now mm-hmm. he goes and the Russians are chanting Rocky at the end. I mean, in the height of the Cold War and all yeah, of that stuff. Happened. I mean, yeah, he's that whole training. I mean, as amazing as the training montage is, the
that's training actually, montage. Truth be told, that is like the best training
montage. Fantastic, in all the but films. Still, it's cartoony yeah. and comic booky, right? So
I try to pick up a log.
That's once, the Ip Man series kind of did the same thing in the sense that, like, the first couple of movies, even though they were fictional tellings of the life, right? They were meant to be entertaining more than historical.
Right.
The right. third one and then this fourth one just become like they're just action films for the sake of existing and being like, we have to take this now to the next level because I don't think we right. thought we were going to be making part three and part four.
Sure.
Mm. You know, so.
Yeah.
So bad.
But the first two.
Yeah.
You want to watch those.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good. All right. Where do we transition from here?
Well, there probably isn't a smooth one, but I mean, I don't know. We can get into some of the news that came out, or we can kind of dissect yeah. this Ray Fisher thing if you want for a little bit. Whatever.
Let's say Ray Fisher for the end. So I run out of steam.
And okay.
I'll give him a hard pass.
So the, I guess the, and it, I don't even know if you call it news, but the idea that Chris Evans is in talks to potentially return to the MCU as Captain America. That's news. It hasn't happened yet, but you would think where there's smoke, there's fire, right?
Yeah. Especially for someone who, you know, I think at the end of like, in, well, first of all, they're, you know, they were always talking, it was, I think it was after, maybe even right before Civil War, where their contracts were up and people were, you know, the whole, that whole cast was fighting for more money. And actually, Robert Downey Jr. was like, he cut his, I think he cut some of his money to like make sure that everyone got paid. And mm-hmm. so from what I understand and from what I read was that Chris Evans would come in some sort of like a Stark, like the way Stark was in mm-hmm. Homecoming and the way Stark was in sort of Civil War, like there, but on the peripheral. And it kind of makes sense to me, given some of the directions that I assume we're going with the multiverses and all of that. So it'd be kind of cool to see that. I don't know if we're going to see Cap,
right?
You know, full on shield. And if we do, it might be in some sort of alternate reality kind of situation, but sure. I think it's cool. I think, and I'm down for it. So
yeah.
Come on, more Cap.
I hope that it's that what you just said, one of those scenarios, and it would yeah. make sense because with these multiverses now in both DC and Marvel, like I think everything is on the table.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think you could ever say you've seen the last of anything anymore.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But I would hope that it's not like we're going to bring him back because maybe we're getting cold feet, you know, or we need something and then it's going to be a feature thing. I don't think that because you don't want it yeah. to cheapen the end of Endgame. And also the, you know, the idea of Falcon, right?
Yeah.
Maybe taking the shield and whatever that Falcon and Winter Soldier show is going to lead to. So I'm hoping that, right, they keep it more multiversey, that it's a, you know, sure. a moments here or there where he'll pop in and out, maybe help, you know, with Falcon or something like that, train.
Yeah.
Things like that. That I think would be fun. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. And I mean, we also have, so there's a couple of things that, and just to bring this quickly back to WandaVision, like we have to remember something about that character in particular. Is that while she can create her own reality, she represents like all of the Infinity Stones in some capacity. Like her ability to turn back time, that's a time stone, right? She could sense like the Vision's soul. So she's got a little bit of the soul stone. She works mainly with the ether, like so that all that red stuff like that, the reality stone, whatever. So she has all of that in her. So I don't think we're definitely not done with time manipulation. By any stretch. I mean, we saw it in WandaVision. So I wonder if there's a little bit of that. And again, as we crack open this idea of multiverses, there is a Steve Rogers. There is still a Steve Rogers in this universe as well. He's older, but we don't know, you know? And I think that's the exciting part of like what Marvel is like, where they are right now and what they can do.
Yep.
And I also, this is actually legit news, was that Chris Pratt is going to pop up in the next Thor movie. He broke that news by accident when talking to Tom Holland. I caught that video. They were having like a quick little Q&A session, and you know, Tom Holland was talking about, you know, reprising Spider-Man and kind of where he was shooting and all of that, and how he's kind of come full circle because he did his audition and where the latest film is being shot. And then he asked Chris Pratt, do you have any news to share, anything like that? And he's like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to Australia because I'm about to film Thor. And then Tom Holland's face was like, his mouth drops. And then Chris Pratt's like, wait, what? Like, he's like, Tom Holland's like, are you supposed to say that? And he's like, isn't that news? Isn't that like common knowledge? And Tom Holland's like,
Nope.
Oh, I didn't hear that. So that's Chris funny.
Oh shit. So that's pretty cool.
And it makes sense too.
Right? It makes total sense. Yeah. You know, it makes total sense. The Asgardians of the galaxy. So I think that's pretty dope.
Sure.
But I don't even know where I was gonna go with that. the other quick news tidbit was that Bond got delayed again. I heard that.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Another year, right?
I heard it and then I didn't even do the research. I could be lying. Chris is like googling it right now. He's like, I'm gonna figure it out. Like, watch, look Chris's busy eyes going. Look at him. Look at him.
You know what's funny?
Because I didn't even hear that. So
that's what I heard.
You can't see it.
Holy cow! You've got it's a black hole.
It's a Mysterio pin.
Oh, cool.
I just noticed it on my lamp.
Nice.
I guess Alex put it there. And
Chris, am I making it up?
I mean, you may not be making. I don't want to accuse you of making it up, but I don't see anything.
Hold on.
When
hold
I
on.
Google it recently, that
I might be making it
that
up.
That says it happened.
No, but, I thought so. I heard the same thing.
Let me see. Sorry, guys. For those of you that are listening to us, but you'll get to see us googling things again. Nope. Maybe I am lying. The last delay was in October.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you might be lying.
No. Well, there's an article from 5 days ago. In the Daily Mail that says that James Bond film No Time to Die release is set to be delayed again.
Oh yeah. So yeah, and I. So, what, not
so they
like,
maybe haven't announced the new that it's officially delayed and that what the new date is, but
yeah, there's a lot of speculation that it could get pushed to the fall.
Yeah, well, so here's the thing, and actually I'm glad you mentioned that, because it ties into a question that Ron Diesel asked, right? Mm-hmm. Which was basically, when do we think realistically theaters are going to reopen with an increased capacity this year in 2021? And I think the answer is no idea. Because what we're seeing now is, I mean, we only have a couple of weeks left in January.
Yeah.
Right. And we're no closer, right, to this stuff happening than we were a month ago or 2 months ago. So I think the realization is starting to kind of sneak in that, you know, while HBO Max, that whole idea of releasing all of your films direct to the service for this year was a little wacky, considering there were other options to release movies in the home but still get people to pay for them. But I think the idea, the general idea of not trying to rely solely on theaters for this year is smart, because I don't know that they're going to be reopening anytime soon, to be honest with you. I think that you know, we may be lucky, you know, for those movies that are supposed to be coming out in May, March, forget. I don't even, any movies that were supposed to come out in March.
Like, I even say like,
no way.
April is like.
I say no way for this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And so many studios banked on the spring of 2021.
Yeah.
Like so many studios like stacked up.
Because you got to figure, I mean, even with the vaccine, I mean, it's like, doesn't look like we're going to be in a place right now where early spring, like we're just going to be like, all right, everything's back. And because he mentions at increased capacity. I mean, that's the key. Broadway, which I get is a different thing. Live theater is very different because of the time, the preparation time and all of that you need. They're talking maybe the fall now to come back. And they were, and they were originally supposed to come back June. And then maybe they were saying July, like Hamilton was saying they wouldn't mind reopening July 4th, you know, and be the first show to but now they're saying maybe the fall. And it's because I think we're realizing here we are, January is pretty much over, and things aren't really moving in the direction that we may have thought. So I think if you're one of those like late winter, early spring or early summer, late spring, early summer releases, man, I think you're going to start to worry a little bit right now, or start to make alternative plans, because I mean, theaters will be open to a point, kind of like how they are now, but I don't know. It might at least Warner Brothers doesn't have to worry about that.
No.
This year. They have their plan in place, and we actually have the battle of streaming services now releasing all their, you know, movies at home, because I saw commercials now 2 days in a row, one for HBO Max, which is, you know, promoting their movies that are coming out in the next few months, one of which is Godzilla versus Kong, which that quick footage looks really cool, actually. It's a very quick shot of Godzilla coming up and Kong, and then Kong throws like a haymaker punch.
Nice.
Adam, which is kind of cool. But Netflix also, I just saw it earlier, they have a commercial where they're touting like, it's like three new movies every month or something like that in 2021. And it's like all these big name stars that are, you know, and they show like little clips and all that stuff. So like, this is where we are right now. You know, we're not even, that's what we're doing. We're touting all of our, the movies you're going to be able to watch at home in 2021.
It's the age of streaming.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I say nothing this year. I don't think anything is going to be
at all.
Any theater is going to be open to capacity this year.
No,
at all.
I mean, maybe late. Maybe the fall. Maybe the holiday season. Maybe.
Yeah, which is 11 months. Another year. I say another year.
Because the thing is, even with the vaccine, I mean, they're saying now, like, there's a debate now whether, like, well, do you have to wear the mask even after you've taken it and all this stuff? Yeah. And so it's going back and forth, because we still don't know yet like what the response is going to be. Right. So there's still going to be some time where we just don't, again, flip that switch. There's nothing that's going to get us to flip a switch to say, okay, boom,
we're all back to
everything's
normal.
Back to normal. It's just something that's going to happen gradually. And then hopefully, knock on wood, one day we're just going to wake up and realize, oh, okay, we kind of slowly got back to normal, and we're gonna have to remember this time, sadly, and be like, oh, remember that time, you know. But we're, I think, a ways away from getting to the point where we say, hey, can you remember back then, you know?
It's so crazy how this moment in time, which is a substantial period of time, is defining a lot of things. Like, it's defining how, like, my daughter, who's four, my wife got the vaccine, and this is the first thing my daughter asks my wife: does that mean you don't have to wear a mask anymore?
Hmm.
And I was like, hell yeah, girl, you smart as hell.
You're so smart.
And I'm like, okay. And, you know, and my, you know, my wife is like, I don't know the answer to that. Like, for now, because I could still, even though I may not, like, exhibit any symptoms, I still may be a carrier, and you guys don't have the vaccine, so... who knows?
Yeah, my parents just got it yesterday.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's... And
we were worried about my stepdad because he has, like, really bad allergies.
Right.
So I was like, please take a Benadryl before. But they are completely fine.
That's
like,
great.
I called my mom, I checked in, and she was like, no, I feel great. She got the shingles vax, the Shingrix.
Yep.
She got that, I think, like 2 weeks ago, and that I think that's a 2-shot deal too. So I think she got her second shot like 2 weeks ago, and that one made her her arm was in pain. She was really fatigued. Like, she had to lay down. She had no energy. She was kind of dizzy, kind of nauseous. And then with this one, I called her. I'm like checking in. She's like, oh yeah, I'm fine. So.
Yeah. Awesome. And that's the thing too with the vaccine, is that because it's a 2-dose vaccine, every person that gets it, there's another month before their process is even complete, right? So just getting that first dose, that's not going to do much for you. So we're still behind, obviously, because, you know, they're not going to, the production doesn't start ramping up really till the early part now this year, right? Where we start to get like hundreds of millions of shots by sometime in June or whatever the timeline is. Right. But so for everyone who gets start, every wave that gets the vaccine, they're still 28 or 30, whatever it is, days away from completing that process. So that's where this thing starts to drag. So if the, you know, the majority of people get it towards the like spring, summer, well, now you're going into the, you know, the middle of the summer before like every, so that's where the timelines start to get skewed, even with the vaccine, just because of the way it's administered and the effectiveness of it and all of that.
And I think our governor Cuomo was saying that they want to, you know, he was saying we got to open up because the economy cannot, the city economy cannot take another year of like this type of shutdown, right? Even though we're not in an official shutdown, but it can't take another year of this. So they're going to be implementing, I think, more testing, like testing before you go to a restaurant and kind of implementing maybe like some type of rapid testing. If they do that at the theaters, then perhaps, you know, like Joe Rogan had a show, you know, a comedy show in Austin, Texas, where everyone got tested before they could go inside and enjoy the show. And if you tested positive, sorry, you can't attend, and I'll refund you the money that you paid. So I think they're going to try and do something like that in New York just to get like restaurants or indoor dining or just certain things opened up again. And perhaps theaters might be, might benefit from that type of plan.
Yeah. I think the challenge for me, at least when I think about that, that implementation, that process, is like the cost.
Yeah,
because the cost associated with that kind of testing, like that has to come somewhere. So like everyone's gonna get slapped with a tax for going out, right? I mean, we're getting it now. Like you can't eat without drinking, or you can't drink without eating. So, and then they slap, you know, if you're in the city, they slap another tax on you,
right?
And I get the need for like the, oh yeah, let's get the businesses back up and running, but like I ain't going to the theater to pay another bit of money for that experience when like the rest of the, you know, the world is moving towards this VOD thing, regardless, vaccine or not. Like I don't feel like spending any more money, because I'll tell you, I feel it in the supermarket and I feel it when I go out to dinner. Like that pinch, that little extra, like, hey, and like, you know, for eating out, and I've done it a couple of times, like I don't mind it because I know that these restaurants and these places of business need the extra money, and people are out there putting their lives out to make a living and serve folks. And if I feel comfortable, I'm going to give them as much money as I can afford. But for something like that, like the luxury of going to a movie theater and you're going to charge me that additional money on top of my ticket. Yeah.
No, that, I think that's done. You're like, I'll stay on my Noom diet.
Yep.
Spend time with my kids I'm and good. Have video on demand.
That's right. That's right. So I don't know. It's, I think, and we've said it so many times on the show, but it depends on people's comfort levels as well. Right. Like we have now gone, it's almost a year living like this, and it's going, I think there is absolutely that social component of going to the theater and wanting to be with folks. But I also think there's a lot of people like, I'm cool with not going.
Yeah. I'm, you cool know,
with not spending that money.
I think in the beginning, the video on demand stuff, right? Like the release of like Bill and Ted, we were watching on demand, or like Tenet, for example, that seemed like a Band-Aid. That seemed like, hey, we are doing our best to kind of, you know, roll with the punches, and we still want to get you some sort of content. So like in the meantime, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
But now I think with HBO Max's move, it doesn't seem like a Band-Aid anymore. It seems like we are full force transitioning into a new model. Yeah. And once people get used to that model, that it's going to take over. It's going to be hard to just be like, okay, that was just an interim thing. We're just going to go back to normal now. Like, that's not going to stand because too many changes have already occurred.
And this was
not a Band-Aid anymore.
100%. This was a long time coming. I mean, just look at the way that our show the past couple of weeks has run. Think about it like this. The Mandalorian dominated every week of our show because we were reviewing every episode. Wonder Woman got maybe 1.5 because it's a movie.
Right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like the episodic TV is like where it's at. That's where conversation's happening. That's where culture is. Yeah. You don't need to go to a theater.
And that's all the more reason to release these episodes week to week. Because that kind of that type of conversation won't happen as much if you're binging everything. Right.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have the conversation. Not that everybody binges everything all in one, but for the most part, you're going to get the conversation for a weekend, maybe a day or so into the following week. But that, you know, 2 months of conversation, week to week conversation, you're only going to get that from a week to week format.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you guys have tried it. Amazon has this watch party feature.
I saw it. Disney Plus has the same thing, but
do they?
Yeah. Sorry, Thabo.
Yeah.
every episode of The Mandalorian. Hey guys, can we let's do a watch? He was watching it like 5 o'clock in the morning. I was watching it like 7 o'clock in the morning. Chris wasn't watching it till like 8 in the evening.
Yeah,
and I was waking up at like 10 in the morning.
and not only that, but also like, you know, for me, and I guess for a lot of people too, it's tough because it's like sometimes I would be like, oh, hey, I have a moment now. Let me watch it. Or, oh, yeah. I can't watch it now. Like, I'll catch it like late. I like to watch them like pressure free. So it's tough too to coordinate a time.
Sure. And then for me, the pressure is on because I'm like, I want to be one of the first people to see it.
Yes.
Because I just want to be. And everyone's talking about it. And I want to get a lot like I didn't see it. So Phil texted me. He's like, "Yo, dude, WandaVision, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Shut up! I don't want to hear about it because I didn't see it." And then I go, "Jess wants to watch it." And he's like, "I hope she." This is what he says to me. He goes, "I hope she's not expecting action." And I was like, "Bro, why did you just say that to me, man?" Yes, Phil, I'm putting you on blast.
I hope she's not expecting anything interesting.
Like, dude, why are you saying that to me? I was like, shut your mouth. You're ruining it. Already.
Spoilers work in a lot of different ways. We've gotten to the point where we think of like spoilers in like the micro sense. If I don't tell you something that specifically happens in the episode, then it's not a spoiler. But if I basically give you an idea of what how the show works, that also is a spoiler.
Oh, God.
It's so hard to coordinate even with your significant other. Like Cobra Kai, I've been waiting for Alex to watch it with me. That's why I haven't watched it yet. And I was like, forget about it. WandaVision, I didn't even ask him. So if you're listening, babe, like, I don't know what to tell you. I was like, I need to watch it. Yeah. I didn't even tell him.
Yeah. It was funny. So Jess, before you get on, Jess is like, so what are you guys talking about? And I was like, oh, probably we'll talk about WandaVision. She's like, wait, but you haven't finished seeing it. I was like, sorry, but I watched them.
Sorry, babe. Have to. It's my job.
Yeah.
I need to talk about something.
Well, at least you have the podcast excuse.
Of course. And she's like, well, I still want to see it. I'm like, sure you do. All right. We're watching a really good movie, by the way. It's called The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind.
I heard about that.
It's on Netflix. It's really good.
Boy Who Harnessed the Wind.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. Check that out.
Cool. I just finished The Terror first season on Hulu.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Really good.
All right.
Second season and first season have nothing to do with each other, and I didn't know that until maybe into season one. Then we were kind of like, well, what's season two going to be about? Totally different. Yeah. It's one of those things. But really awesome. And Jared Harris, such a good actor. Yeah.
I took that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then typical, like, This Is Us, where I cry my eyes out.
I've never seen it.
My God.
I don't like crying. I can't cry alone.
I just... sobbing.
Aww.
Like ugly ass crying. Like, And like, I know Jess is watching me like, is he going to do it? Is it going? Is it going?
Yeah.
Like I'm getting a COVID test.
I watched Batman Soul of the Dragon this weekend.
You know what, dude? That looks so bad to me.
No, it's great.
What is that?
It's the new DC animated movie. And
Soul of the Dragon. Yeah,
so the Dragon, but like.
Yeah, I was going to say, what
no,
a name
it's not
for
that.
Batman.
It's, yeah, it's so basically Batman joins forces with other, well, like kind of martial arts based DC characters. Richard Dragon, who's hence the name Soul of the Dragon. And it ties in Lady Shiva and Ben Turner, but who is Bronze Tiger. Right.
That's
so
cool.
Those are, yeah, and they get together and it's cool because like Mark Dacascos,
yeah,
he plays, well, he does the voice of Richard Dragon, and Kelly Hu plays Lady Shiva. Michael Jai White does the voice of Ben Turner / Bronze Tiger.
I mean, that dude has such a distinguishable
yeah
voice.
So it's just that's really awesome. Cool. It ties into you know, the martial arts elements of Batman, which have always existed, right? Yeah. And it's a fun story, and it's set like in the 70s kind of, so it's got that vibe. It's got that
Enter the Dragon, dude. Come on.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's not the same.
I know,
thing,
but it's, you know, they're yeah, playing on it.
It's got the music.
Bring up the guy with the afro, like yeah,
yeah. The music, the look, the vibe.
That's cool.
Yeah, the time period. It's all very much based in that.
Is that on HBO Max?
No. It was released on like, so you gotta buy it. Digital on demand or on you can
on
buy
HBO
it.
Max, not playing games.
Yeah. Anyway, watch that. Enjoy.
I mean, the animated series just dropped on HBO Max, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I own that in every possible format you can have. So
I started catching up on
whatever.
That.
Which one?
Batman the animated series.
Oh, okay. Okay.
1992.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's young and fresh.
Just
Aaron.
The best. Everything. Best Batman.
Watching that show was at
ever.
4 o'clock in the afternoon. Used to come on.
It's.
I was 6 years old.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It.
Chris is like.
Yeah. It. It doesn't get better than Batman the Animated Series.
No.
Have you just been watching random episodes, or are you, like, watching?
Yeah. Just
them in
no.
Order?
You know what? I was going through, my favorites, like the ones that I remember the most.
Right.
The ones that kind of stand out. The funny thing was is that I opened it up and I looked at the – wasn't the first episode Man-Bat? They didn't open up with Man-Bat.
On Leather Wings is the name of the episode.
Yeah. They didn't open up with that one on –
well, they opened –
there's another episode is episode number one. I don't even know.
Well, because so the – there's differences in the production order and the order that they were actually – like they aired on television. So,
okay.
It could be that, or, I mean, I can't imagine that they don't have every episode on there, which would be weird.
No. How many seasons was that? It was 5, right?
Well, there were 3 seasons, 4. And then it became Batman, The New Adventures of Batman. Batman Adventures, whatever it was. So it was it was technically, they consider that season 4, but that's where they kind of changed the like all the voice cast and the crew stayed the same, but the animation changed and the look of the characters changed.
I remember that. He went with the like the Frank Miller type costume, the gray and black.
It was gray and black, and it was well, it wasn't really that Frank Miller-y, but it was gray and black, and they made it a little, they said it was easier to animate. So they made it like Joker Stop. Doesn't have the red lips, which is kind of weird in that version.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool. What else? What anything else? Did
oh,
we
so the stuff? Other news bit was that Deadpool 3
yes.
was announced yes. as being part of the MCU. It's going to be an R-rated film still, but it's going to take place in the MCU. Maybe. I know, Aaron, this used to give you hives back in your old Continuity King days, but is it going – I wonder if it – is it actually going to take place in the MCU, or is it going to take place in the MCU in the same way that Deadpool 1 and 2 took place in the X-Men universe?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Or is this going to be more of like a multiverse thing type of deal?
Hmm.
I think it might be multiverse.
probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what I think is the fun part about it is, and we got a little bit about the, you know, breaking the fourth wall thing. I think they're going to go all in on that in Deadpool 3. Like, we got bits, you know, like bits and pieces of it in Deadpool 1 and 2, but I think they're going all in.
So if they do multiverse it, though, then that means that it will be more in line with how the first two movies connect to the X-Men universe, right?
Potentially. There's so many ways they can do this, because technically Wanda is a mutant, but not in this, like, not in this universe, right? Not in the MCU, technically.
Well, they couldn't say mutant for the longest time.
They can't say mutant, but they can do it now. So, like,
now,
but it opens the door a little bit. Like, we don't, like, that's the thing. I think the importance of WandaVision might be something that we sort of get right now, but it may open the door for a whole host of other opportunities to bring in, you know, the X-Men. Now, you know, it obviously is going to have a role, hopefully, maybe. I don't even know I say this, but it may have a huge role in what happens with Spider-Man. And, you know, obviously the Doctor Strange bit that we know is coming. So I think it's cool to see all of that happen.
Yeah.
And who knows? There's a whole bunch of ways they can do this. And again, this is comic book territory. So if it doesn't work, they'll write it to work.
They just won't put it on Disney Plus.
Right.
Because they can't.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Wolverine popped up on there.
Did it? But that wasn't R, though, right?
No.
That was PG-13.
But, dude, I mean, like, I was watching Days of Future Past as well. Full on, you know, Hugh Jackman ass cheeks on that thing. And I was like, yeah, this is Disney, huh? So they didn't do anything about that.
Is that on Disney? Because I know, I thought I saw some of them. Did they pop up on Disney Plus?
Yeah. Okay. So some of the X-Men films are up there. So Days of Future Past is up there. Just watching them.
Mm. All right. So I guess we can close the show talking about the recent developments in the Ray Fisher versus Walter Hamada and Warner Media saga. We got some new developments. So this really all started because on December 30th, I guess, Ray Fisher tweeted out or released a statement saying that he was not going to participate in any productions that Walter Hamada was involved in, which essentially would include the Flash movie that he was supposed to be a part of, right, as Cyborg.
Right.
Then that leads to a story. I don't know if it was in the Wrap, or probably in the Wrap. Maybe it was in Variety. I don't know, where they basically
said. Yeah, it was
said,
in Variety as well.
Yeah, it was in Variety, where they said that he had basically pulled himself out of the role of as Cyborg in the Flash movie. And then he responded by saying, well, that's not true. Basically, I guess, alluding to the fact that he had not taken himself out of the role. But then it was like a day later that basically WarnerMedia announced that he was not going to be playing Cyborg in the Flash movie. And then this all led to a whole back and forth. And basically, you know, he's calling out Walter Hamada again. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and dissect every element, but the general gist is that WarnerMedia did conduct an investigation. Okay.
Yep.
And it was done. I think all sides agree that it was done by an outside party that was impartial. Yep. And we know that it resulted in what they said was remedial action, which we assume part of that was Joss Whedon being removed, right, from the show that he had been working on. And Ray Fisher tweeted out as such. He basically said, hey, you know, there was an investigation and this amount of people were interviewed. Joss Whedon is out. And he said, Geoff Johns is on his way out. So we know that Geoff Johns has been a target of Ray Fisher's throughout this whole process. And a lot of the animosity between Ray Fisher and Walter Hamada stem from the fact that Ray Fisher believes that Walter Hamada has gone out of his way to protect Geoff Johns, which is his friend and former co-president. Right now, so Walter Hamada, remember, had nothing to do with the production of Justice League. He took over months after that movie was released in theaters. So And nobody's, you know, Ray Fisher's not accusing him of having anything to do with that, but he is saying that he went out of his way to disrupt the investigation and to try to protect Geoff Johns on a number of occasions and so on and so forth. So now that's where that whole thing comes from. Warner Media then came out and released a statement saying Geoff Johns is not going anywhere. He's still the showrunner of Stargirl. He's still going to be working on projects for us and so on and so forth. And they also basically gave their support to Walter Hamada as well.
Yeah,
they re-upped his
contract. They re-upped his contract. They released a statement saying that, you know, he's a good guy, this, that, and the other thing. And you know, they said we'd like to move on from this whole thing. There was an investigation that took place and action was taken, and we trust in the outcome and the results of that investigation, and we're ready to move on. So Ray Fisher is still, though, you know, sticking to his story and still is calling out Walter Hamada. And the only thing we do know now is that, obviously, I don't think anybody's surprised, Warner Media clearly chose Walter Hamada over Ray Fisher. Because if Ray Fisher says on December 30th that he's not going to be a part of any production that Walter Hamada is in going forward, and then doesn't pull himself out, though, of the Flash movie voluntarily, and then he's removed from said movie, and then Walter Hamada gets the contract extension, well, we get where that went.
Right.
So I really don't know what else to say about this other than just going through those facts. I mean, again, there was an investigation, so that validates, and action was taken. So clearly that validates Ray Fisher, right, to a point, because obviously they found things were wrong, especially on the Joss Whedon side, clearly, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's now empowered him to feel like, well, no, there's more to this. And I think that I want everybody to know that, you know, the rest is being covered up and all of this. And he's just going after Geoff Johns. Look, maybe he's right. Maybe Geoff Johns will slowly start to vanish over time. Maybe Walter Hamada got his way and decided that they would just let Geoff Johns finish existing projects and then he would go off. And maybe we won't know that, though. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't know any of that stuff. So it's really, again, it's hard to say without knowing details and knowing facts other than what I've just presented, to say who's right, who's wrong, or any of this stuff. But the only thing we do know is Walter Hamada is staying there. He just got a contract extension. Geoff Johns, for now, is still a part of this team. He's still working on projects, and Ray Fisher is not. So, yeah. you know, I don't know, other than, you know, the fact that we're going to see him in Zack Snyder's Justice League, which was already, you know, predetermined. So I don't really know what to say about it. I mean, look, I appreciate the guy's passion, and clearly he believes he's in the right on this and he's taking a stand. But you know, it'll be interesting to see if he can keep this going long enough to, I mean, he kept it going long enough to get an investigation. Mm-hmm. Can he keep this going long enough to finally see the people that he believes should be punished for their wrongs actually get theirs?
I mean, I think anytime you're fighting against a huge, you know, entity, you know the consequences that are going to come with it. Like, they have a lot more power, a lot more connections than you. Typically in the industry anyway, actors are not seen as very important and disposable, right? Unless you make it to, you know, Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise status, you know, or Julia Roberts status, right? Where you actually have some clout. So he knows the repercussions that could happen. And I commend him for his bravery, because he, despite that, he put his acting career not as a priority, but he put, you know, his passionate beliefs at the forefront and fought for it. And sometimes when you do that on this big of a scale, you're going to be martyred, right? But down the line, he might be helping other actors or opening different doors or how other right. companies do things. But unfortunately, if you're going to come in and wield the loudest voice and go, there are going to be repercussions. It just sucks that he's losing a role. like that and not going to be in the next film, but who knows? Maybe after we see the Snyder Cut, maybe there will be a call for like a Cyborg like standalone movie, which I feel like well, might happen.
That
I
was
feel
already
like that, that might happen.
That ship, I think, already came and went. Like that was one of the first things I remember.
Oh, was it?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I was just, I was just kind of
like, when, yeah, it was like when Zack Snyder was talking about Justice League, like way back before, you know, the whole thing went down. There was a Cyborg movie, a Nightwing movie, a back. There were so many different movies. I mean, obviously, I'm not surprised by any of this. Well, again, you when you throw stones at a king, essentially,
yeah.
You're not gonna be favored upon, and that, and it sucks that he would lose. I mean, obviously, look, yeah, he's gonna he was he, you are literally biting the hand that was feeding you to some capacity, and like you have every right to do that if there's been some unwarranted behavior and things are not, you know, you're fighting a huge machine. He was going to be on the losing end of that.
Yeah.
Stick.
I think, I don't think it really has that much repercussions for audiences.
No.
You know, or like, you know, regular fandom or viewership. I think where it's really making an impact is within the industry.
Yeah.
Like for actors of color, you know, or, mm-hmm. or actors that know how this stuff goes, knows that sometimes you get mistreated on set,
right.
knows that you get peer pressured to do things. You know, I had a friend who one time did background work, and was playing like a call girl, like an escort.
Mm.
So they told them to wear, you know, like skimpy clothes, but said, they don't have to take anything off, just like short skirts and maybe like a little bra, and that they're going to be in the background. No one's going to make them do anything. Well, guess what? They were, the production was trying to get the girls naked, trying to get them to kiss each other. And this is like a major film with a major actor in it. And one of the girls called SAG, called the union, and the union came down and shut down the production, you know, but like things, mistreatment on set happens all the time.
Yeah.
you just, some, a lot of people just don't speak out on it.
Yeah.
So for him, I think it has bigger repercussions, and it means a lot more to people in the industry that understand the industry, have been, you know, fighting uphill or going uphill since they started pursuing it or whatever, and can commend him. That's why I commend him for his bravery, because yeah, it is hard to go against the hand that bites you. I mean, you're entering such a huge whatchamacallit, like entity, right?
Yeah.
You're playing a big superhero. How do you not say, you know what, I am so lucky, I'm just gonna like take my role, shut up, and hope I get a few movies out of this.
Yeah.
You know? But he couldn't do that. And that, I think that speaks to him as a person. And if I was facing any type of mistreatment, I would love for him to be next to me in my corner, because I don't know how to speak out for myself like that. So I think within the community, within like the acting community and the industry, it has a big impact. I think in terms of the next Flash movie, probably not so much. I don't think viewers are gonna kind of miss it, or they're not gonna be like, oh man, like I'm not gonna watch this movie. They're like, they're, people are still gonna see it.
And truth be told though, I mean, I vaguely remember them saying something about Cyborg, but at this stage of the game, because it had been rewritten so many times, I don't know if there was ever, I don't think in this latest version there was ever going to be a place for him.
It may not have been.
In the story. You know what I mean? Like, they were all out teasing Michael Keaton and, and all that.
So that's the thing. The thing with this is the timeline, right? Well, two things. One is the timeline. And I think people are interested as to why now, right? Why did it take him 3 years? For a guy who's clearly very outspoken, right? And strong-minded and strong-willed. Why did it take him 3 years to start this campaign? And a lot of people believe that it was tied to the momentum of the Snyder Cut, right? And as soon as the Snyder Cut thing became a reality and it was announced, then he started speaking out. That started with that whole tweet where he said, I take everything I said back, you know, about Joss Whedon and so on and so forth. And it kind of rolled from there. So, yeah, maybe he did start to see the writing on the wall. Maybe he did start to see that he was, you know, being phased out of the Flash. Maybe he did start to see that that character was completely being phased out. And that's where all of this is coming from. The other thing for him is, and I hope in some ways for his sake, that whatever's going to happen with Geoff Johns, I would hate for what he clearly does not like Geoff Johns, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever happened with them, we've heard some things about what he said. Geoff Johns yelled at him and threatened a thinly kind of veiled threat for his career and all of that stuff in the heat of the moment. But they conducted this investigation, right? And he says in his tweet that Geoff Johns is on his way out. Warner Media says that's not the case. Time will tell on that, just like time will tell, right, like time told with the Joss Whedon thing and everything else in the investigation. But if this investigation had uncovered some type of horrible action, right, that Geoff Johns had done, you would think he would have gone the way of Joss Whedon, right?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think that right they would be right, like, all right, listen, door, you just keep working on Stargirl and, you know, you keep working on this part and that part, and then eventually we'll just kind of phase you out. Like, I don't know that that would have happened, but if that's what's going to happen, then that does actually fit Ray Fisher's narrative of how Walter Hamada has kind of tried to protect Geoff Johns. Mm-hmm. But I would hate to see that he would have blown up, like, his career and this whole opportunity if this stuff with Geoff Johns really wasn't that serious and the investigation that they did didn't uncover anything serious enough to warrant action. And it really just comes down to the fact that he just didn't like the guy because of the way he felt he was treated or maybe was treated or whatever. And that you kind of blow up your career over that. Because really, at the end of the day, the issues that he has with Walter Hamada are the protecting of Geoff Johns and the fact that he felt like Walter Hamada was responsible for that September 4th article and the rap that was trying to talk about how he was not being cooperative with the investigation and all that. So like a lot of this stuff that's going on, the Walter Hamada, Ray Fisher stuff, is really all revolves around Geoff Johns.
Right.
That's why I'm just going to really be interested to see what happens with that going forward, because as outspoken as he's been, and he hasn't really given a lot of details and stuff like that, but a lot of his stuff has turned out to be at least based in some form of reality, right?
Yeah.
Ray Fisher. So who's to say that when he says Geoff Johns is on his way out, that he didn't get that from somewhere? Like, I'm sure he didn't just wake up and decide to put that out there.
Right.
No, why would you want to commit career suicide?
Yeah, well, he's kind of already done that, but yeah.
Like, Hollywood is a machine.
Yeah.
It runs a lot deeper, and they're the people up top, you know? They're like the elites, you know? They try and protect each other. I mean, are you surprised? I'm not surprised that they try and protect each other. They've probably had working relationships for many years, and you have an actor that they're probably looking at like, oh, he's not being gracious, you know, because he's afforded this great opportunity. So yeah, so we're going to try and get this article and try and make him look a little bad and make him look like he wasn't cooperating. And that's why we're cooperating. We're doing everything right. Of course, it's a big Hollywood machine. He's fighting a really big opponent. And I don't think anyone would try and do that unless you really believe in what you're doing. So I think it sucks that he's not going to, you know, as an actor, I think it sucks to find out, okay, I've been written out or removed. But on the other hand, it's like, well, you kind of had to see it coming.
Yeah, I mean, you know? that was my point.
That doesn't excuse it, but it's like he knows that it's coming. You know, he knew that was an option.
Absolutely.
And it actually kind of makes you believe him more, because I know in the beginning, like in the summer, everyone was like, what was he talking about? People were very divided, right? People were like, he's just trying to get attention, that's all he's doing. And then other people were like totally on his side. But I think now I don't think that I'm trying to get attention argument is on the table anymore.
No, because that clear action was taken, you know,
exactly
against so his oppressors.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Well, that's why I say, like, the existence of the investigation and the fact that action was taken validates that.
Yeah, that's the thing you're saying.
So So it's now it's just not now it's a matter of again, that's why I say the Geoff Johns thing I think plays a pivotal role in this because that's what caused a lot of this further conflict.
They gotta get their shit together, man.
Yeah.
Get your shit together. Give us better content.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Treat your actors right. That's it. Yeah.
Because Wonder Woman 1984.
Horrible.
Monster fire.
Yeah, and terrible. Then that's what leads to this whole, you know, the rest of it. I mean, there's more to this. I mean, there was a thing that Grace Randolph did that where she basically said that the entire Stargirl cast hates Geoff Johns, and then people who work on the Stargirl crew came out and said, no, we all love Randolph. I get it. We know what she is. Yeah. But you know,
basically just hoses shit on the wall. Yeah. And see what's there.
So then people who work on Stargirl came out and were like, no, we actually love Geoff Johns. So I know at least like three people that love him, me and like my two co-workers, you know, things like that started happening. Mm-hmm. And like, we're getting into like this stuff now. And, yeah. They did that before,
I guess it was the first time Ray Fisher launched out against Geoff Johns. Patty Jenkins,
yeah,
was up there at the fandom, seeing how much she loved Geoff.
Yeah,
Geoff Johns
and Gal Gadot recently did the same thing.
Same thing,
because he co-wrote, you know, Wonder Woman in '84, and so. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that Geoff Johns did nothing wrong, and that he's, you know, it's just interesting to see how that all the dynamics involved in all of that and how it plays out. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
I will see him again.
Ray Fisher or Geoff Johns?
Yeah, Ray Fisher.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
His fighting spirit, he ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, watch. Marvel's going to be like, come on over, buddy.
Yeah, why not?
Come on over. Oh, you're having a shitty time? Guess who's been recast as Black Panther?
Well, Joss Whedon's not involved with them either, right? So.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Marvel's like, we tell better stories.
Have a perfect character for you.
Well, I mean, James Gunn got job with both studios after his situation.
After his controversy.
You know, he's actually working for both right now. And so, you know, I mean, not that they're the same thing, but I mean, the idea is that Robert Downey, people have gotten second chances.
Yeah.
You know, and then Ray Fisher's isn't even a matter of, I mean, it's not like he did anything wrong except calling attention to something that was wrong. So it's different than those situations. You know what I mean?
People didn't cancel him. The studio canceled
him. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I guess on that note, we can
let's roll out.
Get out of here and go to the fanboygarage.com. You can check out our episodes. You can check out our merch store. And, of course, you can join the conversation on the social medias, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, at the Fanboy Garage. And, of course, you can find us on YouTube. If you're not already watching the show, you can check us out there. The Fanboy Garage podcast, you can subscribe to the channel there. Like our episodes. All that fun stuff. Tell your friends about it. That's the best way, of course, to help us out. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCAlmighty.
And you guys can tweet me, ask me all the questions you want. I love getting your questions at @banana_TFG.
And you can find me at @AAronSpeaks. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much for listening to episode 128 of the Fanboy Garage. We will catch you guys next week. Later.
Peace.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.